You are back on the No Halftime Podcast. This is James Davis and Doug Norrie over there from DFSR.com. That's DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. We sell access to a lineup optimizer and a projection system that can help you to play on No Halftime as well, where you can take our projections and figure out who's going to score more points with our pinpoint accurate system. Doug, I'm going to introduce you again to the crowd. Can you say hello so they know what your voice sounds like?
Yeah, excited to talk some No Halftime challenges today. I fired up a bunch this morning. We can break down, you know, kind of where we see things kind of falling in No Halftime at this point in the season, more than halfway through the season. So yeah, No Halftime, great for that. Great for just kind of firing up those individual one-on-one matchups. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, right on. So in case you're listening through our DFSR feed and you haven't heard of No Halftime by now somehow, No Halftime is a one-of-a-kind fantasy sports app. It's the first of its kind as far as I can tell. And what it allows users to do is create one-on-one fantasy matchups in all of your favorite sports. So we'll talk a lot of football today, maybe sprinkle in some basketball if we run out of things to say about football, but that doesn't often happen, where you can just pick a guy, say you like Tom Brady this week, Doug likes Dak Prescott, you issue your challenge, and then you can go forward from there. So if you're listening on the DFSR feed, check them out. Use promo code DFSR. You can get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit. So Doug, we're going to talk No Halftime stuff today and some broader NFL things as well. The thing I guess I wanted to focus in on today, because it's very pertinent this time of year, especially on No Halftime, where there's no salary cap considerations, you know, no other things that you have to worry about other than who is going to score the most points. I'd love to talk about what the kind of big mistakes people are making this time of the season. You know, you play No Halftime all the time. I play as well. What are the types of challenges you see people issuing that are giving some value to us? What kind of challenges can we issue that people might accept? We'll talk about this on sort of a high level, and then we'll break it down in specifics. So what are you seeing right now when you log into No Halftime?
I think that one thing you see a lot is overvaluing previous week's performance and kind of taking it out of context and thinking that what someone did last week is going to translate one-to-one in terms of what's going to happen this week. And I have some examples of it that I can give, but yeah, I think you'll see that at No Halftime a lot where, right, because I mean, you'll see this in general DFS as well, right? Overvaluing a certain player because something that happened where the context behind that player really hasn't changed at all. And everything else about this player is basically the same for the first 9 weeks. And then you have kind of an outlier performance or whatnot, or, you know, and you probably actually know where I'm going with this in terms of player, but you'll see these guys kind of creep up in challenges, and you can't really translate and say, hey, this person did great last week and therefore they're going to do this week, because it ignores a lot of the context. So I think if you see some of these challenges come up, and you know that maybe it's a kind of someone is throwing a challenge out there because a certain player is maybe running hot or ran hot, I think that's a good place to start. And I can give some examples. Do you actually know who I'm talking about in this specific example?
T.Y. Hilton. Are you talking about this week?
Oh, yeah.
Projecting it to next week? Okay. He's on my list as well. Yeah, so what made that an outlier performance? So people are going to look and say, well, T.Y. Hilton goes off sometimes, so why should they not trust that going forward?
Okay, you know, it's interesting for T.Y. Hilton. It's actually not an outlier performance for him specifically, but his kind of fantasy makeup makes him for the perfect guy to take challenge another player against T.Y. Hilton. So you would take someone else and they would take T.Y. Hilton, because for No Halftime, really what you're trying to do is you're trying to win every matchup, right? But you're actually just trying to win a larger percentage of your matchups over the course of a season. And I think sometimes that's easy to forget, right? Is that saying that, you know, yes, I want to win every single challenge that I accept and every single challenge that I throw out there. But really what I'm trying to do is win, you know, something like 65 to 70% of my challenges would be a phenomenal win rate, right? Like you would be, exactly. So, and with a guy like T.Y. Hilton, where there will be weeks, and I think we said this on our last No Halftime podcast, and I actually think at that point we were referring to Julio Jones, but or maybe it was Amari Cooper, it was one of these kind of players, that it actually was Amari Cooper. If you take a whole season of T.Y. Hilton challenges, up until this point, there would be 3 weeks or something like that where you lost, and 7 weeks where you won, or 6 weeks where you won.
We'll compare him to Golden Tate. They've averaged the exact same number of fantasy points this season, 11.5 fantasy points per game, and that's exactly how it's played out. Tate has beaten Hilton in 5 of the 8 weeks that Tate has played, and if he played that 9th week, he would have beaten them then too with almost perfect certainty. So you would have really gotten killed on the weeks where Hilton went off, but if you take a steadier guy like Tate, more of a possession receiver, basically, yeah, you're just cashing checks in all of those weeks where Hilton goes out there and has 2 catches for 15 yards.
Well, right, and so there's a, you know, we we mentioned this number a lot because it's a good number in terms of safety or in terms of just consistency, and it's coefficient of variation. And coefficient of variation is basically a player's standard deviation divided by their average number of points. And what that basically does is boils down into a comparative number that you can look at all players, because you can't really compare standard deviations, one player standard deviation to another player standard deviation, if you don't understand how many points that player is scoring, because a guy who scores more points is on a week-to-week basis is going to have a higher standard deviation. But coefficient of variation is able to basically put everyone sort of on the same level and look at where they are in terms of consistency. And specifically Golden Tate, his coefficient of variation is 0.45, which is very low. That is it's a very low. It means he's incredibly consistent over the course of, relative to his standard deviation. He is a week-to-week. He's just week to week. He's going to show a pretty consistent performance. It's actually one of the lowest coefficient of variations around his average fantasy points scored. T.Y. Hilton's. Do you have a guess what T.Y. Hilton's is? But by the way, 0.6 is high. Like 0.6 is a volatile play.
Well, I think I know this from another podcast. I'm going to say it's like 0.9.
0.93. 0.93 yeah. is close to one, which means he's living so far on either end of the graph each time he goes out there that you are going to be in such a great spot. And by the way, we have multiple seasons of this kind of performance, right? It's not just, this isn't just one.
Oh, and that was with good quarterback play. Now that he has very bad quarterback play, it's really exacerbated the problem even more dramatically.
So I think that you would be in a good spot on No Halftime by throwing out specifically just T.Y. Hilton challenges. Now, what I would do is I wouldn't just limit yourself to one player to challenge him against. I think you can take basically the entire group of players that he is around the average fantasy points scored grouping, like, you know, because, like, so for instance, like,
take Doug Baldwin, Michael Thomas.
Well, right, no one's gonna take an Antonio Brown. Like you get Antonio Brown and versus T.Y. Hilton, right? Like, no one's gonna, those kind of challenges exactly. are not gonna be accepted. I mean, they might be, but I really wouldn't probably spend my time throwing a lot of those out, because I don't think a lot of those are going to be accepted. But that entire group of guys that sits around him, yeah, Thomas, Hogan, well, Hogan's hurt, Thomas, Tate, I mean, even Julio Jones, so that would, you'd probably be, I'm not sure.
You're not going to get that accepted, I don't think. But how about Keenan Allen? I mean, I like Keenan Allen, and that's
Keenan fun. Allen is another one. I mean, really almost anybody, honestly, any Jarvis Landry would be a good one. Jarvis Landry has been incredibly consistent this year, 0.36.
You'll get that snap accepted if you put Jarvis Landry and T.Y. Hilton out there. You'll instant accept it in my
mind. Well, Jarvis Landry is averaging more points per game this season and has been, I mean, three times more consistent or something like that. So all of these plays, I think, will get accepted. I actually did accept a challenge this morning of T.Y. Hilton versus Sterling Shepard. And I think that that is probably even a little riskier than I usually like to go, but it was just available, so I took it. And I think that that offers sort of like that perfect scenario that we're looking for. That I think you, like, if I started throwing out Sterling Shepard versus T.Y. Hilton thing challenges right now, I would get them all accepted, I believe. And I believe
you could mortgage your house putting up enough challenges.
Now, again, the way No Halftime is structured, I don't want to just put all of my eggs. I'm fine putting all of my eggs against T.Y. Hilton in that basket, but I'm not willing to. And by the way, it wouldn't stop me if he also had a good week this week from doing it again next week, right? Like, so I wouldn't be deterred by, if it didn't work out this week, by saying, oh my God, T.Y. Hilton, never. I mean, the old DFS philosophy of never again, which we see over and over and over again, which is a completely incorrect way to think about this. But I would have this basket of receivers and it would be all against T.Y. Hilton. And I believe that on the weeks where T.Y. Hilton is really good, I'm going to get there on every single one of them. On the weeks where he's medium, which actually really doesn't happen to him, I'm going to get there. I'm probably still on a higher percentage. And the weeks where he's great, I might still be able to compete with a couple of them and understand that I'm going to lose and then be willing to do it all again next week with specifically this guy. And there's a couple other examples. So anyway, that's, I think, one way to... It's a very long answer to say that's one way to start taking advantage of stuff.
I think that's great. I mean, I think that's where a lot of the value lies in general, is really just figuring out how to evaluate opportunity and what it means. You know, we've seen this in basketball. We see it in the NFL as well, where one of the superpowers that we've developed over years and years, half a decade now of doing this basically, is figuring out, well, what does a big week from T.Y. Hilton mean versus a big week from Adrian Peterson, who went out there and had 37 carries? You know, how can we really evaluate those against one another? Which can we trust going forward? What are the factors that have changed or stayed the same that have caused this performance to happen, or kind of just been around so that this performance could happen randomly? And I think one of the really important things to keep in mind with No Halftime that also just makes it so profitable is that DFS, you know, it's big scale, you know, multiple thousands of entries, salary cap format DFS, that's much more of like a market in the same way the stock market would be, or, you know, betting lines in Vegas, things like that, where there are enough really smart money involved that you can get an edge, but it's a lot harder. You know, you have to be really outthinking a huge number of people in order to win. And just by necessity, then it's very difficult to do that. On No Halftime, that's not the case. You only need to find one person who thinks something different than you think. One person that's evaluating things based on their hometown favorite, or, you know, big outlier performance, or doesn't understand which touchdowns happen sort of due to luck, like T.Y. Hilton's ridiculous wide receiver touchdown last week, and which ones happen because the guy gets all the red zone opportunities, right? So on No Halftime, we really have the opportunity to just go around and have much more edge in any given contest, in these one-on-one contests, than you would have literally in any other salary cap game format. Do you think that's safe to say? Like,
well, imagine taking
is there any double up that you could get on any other site where you could get a situation like, I don't know, some like Golden Tate versus T.Y. Hilton level edge? I don't think so.
Well, the other thing too is imagine taking a head-to-head on some of those other sites and be able to see the person's lineup ahead of time, right? Like it would influence how you chose your head-to-heads, right? Like right now, yeah, you do it based on seeing the names of some of the bigger DFS players and choosing, deciding whether or not you think you have an edge against them. Well, now imagine you just saw their entire lineup and you just chose, and I could say, well, I know what their lineup's going to be, and this is going to be my lineup, and you would choose your games much differently. Well, No Halftime, it's essentially what you're doing, right? It actually doesn't matter who the person throwing it out there is. They could be, you know, the biggest DFS player in the world or not. It matters zero. And actually that's where another huge edge. So yes, I agree. I completely agree with you in that, that you are seeing all the cards on the table before you even start, and then evaluating the decision. And then honestly, just it's the easiest way to be comfortable with your decision-making is just knowing ahead of time what the exact parameters of the challenge are and just kind of going from there, or not taking it, right? Like, or just kind of swiping left, swiping right, and deciding, you know, if I want to do this or not. So I think that that's just another incredible advantage you have in No Halftime. I wish I could roll down some head-to-head matchups on FanDuel or DraftKings and be able to say, oh my God, this guy's playing. Well, last week we laughed about Jared Goff, someone playing Jared Goff, and that didn't look correct. But anyway, yeah, I would have probably taken that that ahead of time before he went completely off. So, all this to say, this is the other great advantage of being able to play on this app and just saying, the choice of saying, I believe I'm in a good situation with this player versus this player, being comfortable with the decision and then moving on.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And I also have to just admit that from a lot of what you were just saying, I was actually thinking you said the word influence with that inflection. And this is pertinent. This is actually relevant. We're doing the No Halftime Takeover podcast. When Nas responded to Jay-Z's song, The Takeover, he said, name a rapper that I ain't influenced. And he did that in response to Jay-Z's song, The Takeover. And we're on the No Halftime Takeover podcast. So that just occurred in my head. So that's mostly what I was thinking about for the last 2 minutes. And I just have to get it off my chest, or I'm going to be thinking about it for the rest of the podcast. So
I didn't understand anything you just said. All right.
Nas is a rapper from the 90s. Okay. So yeah. So let's jump into a few others here, because I think there are a few different performances we can look at from last week where we can start to think about edge we might have going forward. Or actually, you know, I have some questions, you know, stuff that you might think is legit that I don't, and vice versa. So I'd love to know what you think of Terrence Williams. I mean, Terrence Williams came completely out of nowhere last week, 9 targets, 9 receptions, 100 yards. I have to feel like Dallas being such a public team that there are some people that, or I'm sorry, 141 yards. That's 100% conversion rate. So 141 yards on 9 targets for 9 receptions. People are going to see the target increase. They're going to obviously see the receptions and yards increase and kind of get excited. You know, some people are going to want to play Terrence Williams in salary cap format DFS as well. Do you think he's a guy that we can target, or do you think that this change in opportunity is legit?
No, and actually, I didn't know you were going to bring him up, and if I had, I would have actually really quick and looked at the stat. I mean, we could always pause this and look, but I'm almost positive that I'm nearly 100% sure that it's an outlier game, but I also believe there's context behind the outlier, and that I'm almost positive that Kansas City, whatever side of the field Terrence Williams lines up on, Kansas City has been one of the worst in football at defending that side of the field. And I'm pretty sure it's wherever Marcus Peters doesn't line up.
Yeah, they're pretty good at shadowing wide receiver lines, right?
Right. Understanding that there's whatever the spot that Terrence Williams lined up, I believe is on the left side of the field, that Kansas City has been one of the worst in the league at defending this. So if you know this and say, like, look, Terrence Williams got this dream matchup that other wide receivers have completely exploited over the course of the season, and then you look at his 9 targets and say, That's just not, it's very, very unlikely to happen again. Now, there's one piece of, there is a context that could have Terrence Williams be a good play, and that's the possible unavailability of Zeke Elliott, right? And if that is the case, then Dallas does kind of become a different team. And so that's also hard to evaluate. Like what yeah, they, when a running
back leaves, how that affects your wide receiver too, basically. That is tricky.
Exactly. So if Zeke was playing, I'd be very comfortable in saying, throwing out really just even like low level wide receivers against Terrence Williams and seeing if they were, you know, other teams wide receiver twos and see if they were accepted. Because I don't think he's likely to repeat a performance like this. That being said, there's this one other little caveat piece of news that I would make me a little, just that little piece of gun shy. And that's only because I just don't understand fully what Dallas's plans are if they don't have essentially like, you know, a top two running back in football playing on their team this week.
So let's do a no halftime challenge. And Zeke is going to be out. You see a challenge. Keenan Allen heads up versus Terrence Williams. Who do you take?
I'd take Keenan Allen. How about Devin Funchess? I'd take Funchess.
How about...
I take any team's wide receiver one, I would take over Terrence Williams. So okay.
How about Marvin Jones?
That's a guy I want to get into, actually. He's a guy that actually I did accept a couple challenges on Marvin Jones.
Against Marvin Jones or with Marvin Jones?
With Marvin Jones. Okay. He's very interesting. He has, over the last 4 or 5 weeks, he has been one of the top target guys in all of football. Yep. And that's with Golden Tate playing. So the idea behind Jones being an interesting value up play is when Tate isn't there, Tate's traditionally been, you know, the very much the possession wide receiver on that team. That if Tate weren't playing and were banged up, that we would see an increased targets for Jones. Now, but that the thing is with him, the targets have sustained even with Tate on the field. Jones is actually over the course of the season been one of the most consistent wide receivers in football in his range. So other wide receivers in his range, guys like AJ Green, Doug Baldwin, Larry Fitzgerald, Jones's coefficient variation is lower than all of them. Oh, except for Baldwin. He's basically tied with Baldwin. He's been incredibly consistent. He's been the same level of consistency as guys like Tyreek Hill. I think all of those players you would probably think, maybe not Fitzgerald because of the quarterback change, but the other ones that I've mentioned, I don't think you would maybe necessarily think to put Marvin Jones in that category of guys. Like, and that maybe other people understand, maybe other people do. I mean, would you put Marvin Jones, a sight unseen, without having looked maybe at some of his numbers, would you have put Marvin Jones in that class of wide receiver that I just mentioned, the Greens, the Baldwins, the Tyreek Hills, or would your natural inclination to be kind of to put him a little underneath that
group? I would probably put Green above them, but I think I had him in that group. I mean, also I'm a DFS professional alongside you, so I just happen to know a lot of the stats that you just shared, right? Cause we talk all the time, but yeah, I think the average fan, and again, this is the interesting thing against no halftime. You don't have to play against me. If you play the double ups on FanDuel on Sunday, you will be playing against us, you know, and that's, maybe you don't mind that because there's so many entries in there, but that's a fact of life. If you enter basically any of the big double ups on FanDuel, you're playing against me. Do you want to play against me? Probably. When you could just play against some stranger on no halftime that may or may not have any clue what's going on, you probably shouldn't. And I think that speaks to where I think there's a lot of value. And I think Marvin Jones is a great example of this where, you know, unlike Terrence Williams, and I think you can maybe get that challenge accepted. You know, there's just enough Cowboys fanboys out there that maybe you could get it done. But there's even other guys like Mohamed Sanu, for instance, who's doing the wide receiver two thing better on average than Terrence Williams had throughout the season. But yeah, you just go there and you can get guys like Marvin Jones. Somebody out there would be happy to take the other side of your Marvin Jones bet just because they don't believe it or they think he's a one-hit wonder. They don't really understand that he's been doing more this year than just catching the long ball. You know, I think he's actually an example of a guy who we do want to change our evaluation of him, but even compared to what we thought of him early in the season.
Oh, definitely. A couple of Marvin Jones challenges that I took. I took Marvin Jones. I had the Marvin Jones side versus Larry Fitzgerald, which I really like because Fitzgerald is a guy who does exist in that same average fantasy points per game territory as Jones, and yet has taken a massive quarterback downgrade from Palmer. And Palmer, honestly, wasn't that good anyway. And then to go from Palmer to Stanton is... I mean, that you're getting below replacement level quarterback play at this point. Plus, they're, you know, on a short week in Thursday. My only concern. Oh, I also took Marvin Jones versus T.Y. Hilton as well. But my only concern with a guy like
you Jones. You got Marvin Jones against T.Y. Hilton?
Correct.
You're stealing. That should be against the law.
So So my only concern with a guy like Marvin Jones on a week like this is that the matchup is great. Cleveland is completely awful. The line is very high in that game. It's -12.5. And whenever you see lines like this, you do start getting concerned about blowout risk.
And downfield receivers are affected by that disproportionately as compared to, you know, primary possession guys, right?
Correct. And you just run out of time. You know, you'll run out of time in the fourth quarter where the team incentivized to throw the ball possibly only one of the three downs that they're or one of the four downs, I guess, if you want to count if they're going to punt or not, but if they're only incentivized to throw on one of those downs, and maybe not even that because they're running the clock out, you are going to take a hit on the wide receiver game. The good news is, even with this high line, Detroit has not been able to run the ball at all this year. They're awful on the ground.
Poor Abdullah had 21 carries, 2 fumbles last week, like 50 yards. It's terrible.
Exactly. And like in a game where they're just trying to bleed the clock out, he still can't run. They cannot run the ball at all. And to essentially get up and then run the clock down in non-blowout situations, you need to have a running game, which they don't. And that's actually the other reason you see these good week to week performances on both Tate and Jones, because they completely lack this other piece of the game. So while usually a -12.5 line would scare me off of a player, it doesn't as much in this game because they're completely inept in half of the thing you need to do on offense, which is running the ball. It also helps a little bit. I think that Cleveland's coming off a bye here. And so that they're, while they're 12.5 Cleveland stinks completely, but they're also 2 weeks into preparation for this game. I think that does probably help them as well. So all this being said, the 12.5 doesn't scare me off Jones. I really like him. And he's a surprise name to see living in this group of other, I think what we would have felt going into the season would be more known commodities at wide receiver.
Yeah. I think that's a great analysis of him. And I think, you know, one of the ways you can get a profit on No Halftime too is actually just keying in on guys who you believe that the public doesn't have an accurate perception of. Obviously, I mean, we talked about doing that in the way of very obvious one is guys who have overperformed and cutting against the grain. Like, you know, you could have done this with Amari Cooper, for instance, after his insane blowout game. You could have gotten, I know, because I got some challenges where you could get players that are just much more consistent, have much more regular opportunity. And then he goes out there, he has 10 targets, but just only had the 5 catches. And just anyone who was taking the other side of the Amari Cooper bets that week had a really, really nice time. But I like going this other way too, where there
pause real quick. One thing about Amari Cooper is Amari Cooper makes T.Y. Hilton look like the most consistent wide receiver in football. Amari Cooper's coefficient, I hadn't even seen this. Amari Cooper's, I didn't think I thought 0.93 was as high as you could get. Any guess what Cooper's is?
No, I have no idea.
1.2.
How's that even possible?
It's an insane. His standard deviation is going up and over because he's had
the best game of the week combined with scoring one fantasy point every other week. Yeah,
exactly. The number is completely insane. I think people are onto the Amari Cooper thing at this point, though. I mean, like,
well, they are, but people always want to talk themselves into this narrative, especially when a guy has been a name in the past and then he comes back and has a good week. What do you see on all of the talking head shows on ESPN and elsewhere? Oh, this guy's back. Amari Cooper's back. See, they got him back involved in the offense, 19 targets. He's back, baby. And just they recognize someone's name and they want to go crazy. And they're saying the exact same thing about T.Y. Hilton right now. And yeah, Hilton had a great game. And actually, Hilton, you know, I don't necessarily hate his prospects if your goal is to win a big tournament. But again, on No Halftime, this is straight cash, homie. It's every game is just a one-on-one on average who's going to score more points. And those guys will be the bane of your existence. Don't, whatever you do, please, just don't average up points to figure out value. Please look at standard deviation, things like coefficient of variation. You have to do it.
And we knew these things. It's funny about, you know, we want to sometimes say that football, the sample size is just too small to have anything normalized around a relevant sample size. That's true about some things and it's not about others, right? Like, you know, a couple weeks worth of defense is not going to be necessarily a good judge of how good a defense is, right? There's too many pieces of context. At this point, we have a good enough sample size on Cooper and Hilton that this is just who they are. They're not good at, they can't catch the ball consistently. Whatever it is about their route running. I mean, so specifically Cooper with his hands are awful, right? Like he just can't catch the ball. And we just have enough of a sample size. It's not likely to change anytime soon. And so when we have multiple seasons of this, it's not running bad for these guys. If you, and again, we knew it going into the season. This was known information, basically statistically going into the season. If you took, and I'm actually just kind of lamenting that I didn't do this. If you just took an entire season's worth of no halftime challenges with these two guys, with almost any group of any name relevant group of wide receiver, like anyone that in the top basically 30 to 50, well, not maybe 50 is too many, the top 30 to probably 40 wide receivers, any of them over the course of the season, and just only did T.Y. Hilton versus Amari Cooper challenges, which almost always would have been accepted, you would be in fantastic shape. And again, we know this is a sample size that has, for these two guys, has normalized.
Yeah, Mike Evans, you can throw him in that group too. There are just some guys.
Yeah, he's another very inconsistent one. Not on the same level of those guys, but.
Well, this season, right? But Evans has shown a propensity for that level of inconsistency in the past. Yes. And I mean, it's like, you know, one of the ways we've profited on no halftime in the past too is just taking terrible pitchers versus good hitters. Another thing you can do here is oftentimes just take running backs versus wide receivers, just in general. You know, maybe not outside of the elite groups like Antonio Brown and guys like that, but just on average, the opportunity is so much more consistent for running backs that you can take a second tier running back and oftentimes, you know, on average, outperform a second tier wide receiver pretty handily, or even a tier 1A level wide receiver, you know.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, because I did take a challenge with a running back versus a wide receiver, and I'm wondering your thoughts on it. The challenge was Golden Tate, and I took the Mark Ingram side of the Golden Tate challenge. Do you think the reason I think this challenge was thrown out there is because I think there's some uncertainty about what Ingram's opportunity. Being the driver there. Do you think that was a challenge that, do you think that was too risky of a challenge for me to accept, to accept the Ingram side of it?
No, I think I like the Ingram side. You know, Ingram obviously had the bad week, very bad week a couple of weeks ago, where he, you know, ostensibly lost the role to Kamara for a little while. He comes back last week. He had 17 touches. So it's not like he disappeared completely. And we know the Saints offense can support two running backs. They've done this in the past and appear to be doing it right now. You don't like that Kamara's both snaps and opportunity are on the rise, but just in a vacuum, like taking a guy like Ingram, who has just been really consistent with the opportunity in the past over basically any mid-tier wide receiver, feels good to me. And even though Tate is pretty consistent, if you came to me and said one of these two guys is going to score 3 fantasy points this week, I would always choose Tate. So from that perspective, I do like the Ingram side.
Yeah, and that's where I landed with that, is that I believe, sort of for the same reason I was okay. Well, it's not the same reason. In the blowout factor in Detroit for a wide receiver versus a running back challenge is what is a little different with the wide receiver versus wide receiver challenge. But for the opportunity, I think sustaining for Ingram in this situation, this one was a little closer than I usually like to get. I did it also as much of as a talking point as I really loved the challenge, which it's not a challenge I would probably ever throw out there. Ingram still did out snap Kamara. He's still clear of the goal line back. I think he's definitely the thing that they want to do in games where they are leading. They are slight favorites against Buffalo. I don't like that it's outside. This was, again, a little closer, but I thought that would be interesting talking about what we do with sort of mid-tier running backs versus mid-tier wide receivers.
Well, I think that's a great point. And I think it also highlights for me that there are like almost our arbitrage opportunities, right? Like you can take something like, so say you took Ingram versus Tate, and I like that side of the bet. You can also go ahead and take Tate against T.Y. Hilton, right? And so in that way, basically, unless T.Y. Hilton just absolutely goes off and kills you, if Tate goes off, well, he's going to beat T.Y. Hilton, then he's probably going to beat T.Y. Hilton anyway, just on average. And if Tate is bad and Hilton is bad, you probably still get a better game out of Tate, generally speaking. But if Ingram has a decent game, then he outperforms him, which is to say, on no halftime, you don't have to decide guys that you quote unquote like and guys that you dislike. You can look for different sorts of opportunities and you can bet against guys and bet with them in the same week and feel pretty good about it from my perspective. And I don't think that's an inconsistent or losing approach whatsoever. Actually, it's a very kind of granular and intentional way of hedging. You know, that's the whole concept of hedging. A lot of people think of it in terms of giving up EV. No halftime allows you to do plus EV hedging, which is to take, you know, go against a guy in a situation where you think he's going to lose and go with a guy in a situation where he thinks he's going to win, which isn't really something you can do on a big salary cap game format site anyway, right? Like you're either with a guy or you're against him. And that's pretty much how you have to weigh in. I mean, you can play different guys in different lineups, but I really like the head-to-head aspect. I think that creates a pretty interesting situation. So going into this week, you've highlighted a few of the, and we're going to get out of here in a little while here, but you've highlighted a few of the guys that you're targeting this week. Was there anyone else that jumped to the front of the line for you in terms of guys you found landing in your challenges more often than others?
I didn't see as many. There wasn't a necessary consistency of player landing in there. I do have a couple other challenges that I accepted that I'm kind of wondering your thoughts on. One was Frank Gore and Orleans Darkwell. This is interesting, and this is a fun. These are another one I think No Halftime is fun because it's rare that I'm going to be thinking about either of these two guys on a big Sunday slate of. But I like this because I also like the opportunity to be able to do it. And so when it comes up, I don't think that I would. This is not a challenge I would have thrown out there, but I don't think just because Frank Gore and Orleans Darkwell just aren't on my frontal cortex of thought process when I'm thinking on going into a week, except to say that I'm probably not going to play either of them in cash games. But in comparing them against each other, I think it does offer an interesting way to look at just like, you know, one player versus the other. Do you have a gut? I got to throw this at you without maybe much prep time here. Do you have a gut feeling on Gore versus Darkwood?
I don't have a very strong feeling on Gore versus Darkwood, to be honest with you. I mean, I see that
I'm not sure.
The matchup is totally different. Well, yeah, these guys aren't DFS relevant really, but Darkwood does have the insane matchup with San Francisco. So I really like that aspect of it. Gore does not have a great matchup with Pittsburgh. I would imagine you didn't issue this challenge. So somebody else out there went out of their way to issue it. I'm just wondering why. Like the edge lies here? I guess I'm curious to know from you where you think the edge lies. But
the edge is clearly on Darkwood's side for me. Gore is. Well, first of all, I don't understand. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this because these guys aren't a ton. But it was more highlighting to me, it doesn't always need to be Le'Veon Bell versus Antonio Brown kind of challenges, right? Like you can sort of pick low level guys that people are going to have a trouble getting a handle on, and have them accepted with and feel pretty good about it. And it's actually these other lesser known guys. And football is such a public sport at this point that people's knowledge of football is much greater than any other sport because the time lag between the games, just the intense public piece of fantasy revolving around football means that your average Joe is actually going to know a lot more about football than they're going to know about any other sport. And it's actually kind of not even close, but there's still these guys that exist out here that are going to take the field that are in spots. And I think if you're looking at Frank Gore as a huge underdog versus Pittsburgh, that number one, that's a terrible place to start with any running back, is being a 10-point underdog to anybody is not really a way that you want to go with your running backs. His snaps have been eaten into by Marlon Mack, whereas Orleans Darkwa has emerged sort of as the guy that the Giants want to run the ball with, even though they're not great at running.
He's the head that wears the crown. Yeah.
He was not completely ineffective, even in last week when they were getting blown out. And San Francisco's defense, they played a high pace. They played a high pace on offense and a lot of opponent possessions. And this is a situation where I do think that the Giants in general are guys that you can get pretty nice challenges on, just because the Giants the Giants stink. So don't get me wrong there, but they're finally going to play a team that is completely awful on defense. And that's San Francisco. So I happily took the Orleans Darko side of this, and just like the idea of this is my one opportunity that I can root against Frank Gore and for Orleans Darko, because it's not a situation that usually comes up just in just general DFS fantasy strategy.
Yeah. I think that's a spot on analysis. I mean, I think too, sometimes people just throw challenges out there. They just have to, without thinking about them very much. Right. So like if you're a Colts fan, maybe you just like click on your guy and you just start issuing challenges almost like randomly. You're like, Gore is better than people think. Like it's a chip on your shoulder thing or who knows why. But you keep firing them off and then, you know, you just don't even realize the Darkwa has become the main running back, right? Like you just see some average number of fantasy points or the salary elsewhere and you just try to fire it off to see if you can get some skin in the game. Like people's incentives. And again, people with incentives like that, they don't move the markets on the big sites, but in No Halftime, there is no market. It's just individual bets. And that's why I think it's just so profitable. It's just one of the best possible ways, especially for people dipping their toes into the DFS landscape to get started. The last guy I want to talk about before we get going is Adrian Peterson. I mean, Peterson has been really up and down since moving to Arizona. Basically had, you know, that 25-point game kind of came shooting out of a cannon. It was terrible against the Rams when people wind up playing him. And then coach comes out and says, we're going to lean on Peterson a little bit more this week, has 39 touches against San Francisco, to your point about Dark Horse matchup. The 39 touches for him, he's a little on the old side, as we know. Tough matchup here with Seattle, Thursday night game. So by the time you're listening to this, this is a decision you'd have to make for tonight. But I guess it's relevant going forward, too. What do you think of Peterson in a situation like this? Is it reasonable to want to target him? Do we want to go against him? I can't figure out if he's the... you know, if he randomly is putting up these points or if this is a situation where I can perhaps get value going forward.
Yeah, I kind of hate Peterson. I think that...
I hate him as a person, too, based on all the public stuff. But what about his football skills?
No, I think that I hate him. I wasn't even thinking about the other stuff. I hate him as a, I hate him on the football side of this. I think this matchup is bad. I don't like the short rest. I think I feel like the being old part matters for him. There's a lot of miles on this, on those legs. And
so 39 touches 3 days later, going out and playing a tough defense.
Yeah. It's just the exact time to... It's actually the exact time to... take even middle, I would say middling running backs against him because, again, they're minus six underdogs at home, or excuse me, plus six underdogs at home with on the short rest. It's not a great spot for Seattle either because Seattle's traveling on short rest after a late 4 o'clock game on Sunday, which is really a bad situation really for any team. And those things actually do kind of add up over the course of a season. That travel, we've learned that travel thing actually really matters for football. So the Seattle is not in a great spot either against Arizona, but 39 touches. It's just not, this isn't Le'Veon Bell, right? Like this is not a guy that's just is a candidate to bounce back from that kind of usage. The usage, frankly, is irresponsible unless you just think that this guy is not going to be on the team next year, which I think is probably what they feel with David Johnson coming back. So from that standpoint, it's not irresponsible, but I would love to take really just about anybody against Peterson here. I would take, I'm just trying to look at like other guys that we have in, I don't know if you had a specific guy you thought about taking him against. I would take, I mean, any top tier running back against them. I would even take guys like Carlos Hyde over him.
How about Orleans Darkwin?
That one's closer to me.
Dang.
That's interesting. I probably wouldn't only because I was comfortable because I think Frank Gore also completely stinks and they have another
you
guy.
You probably get that accepted.
it's close, but it's making me think. I mean, honestly, it's making me pause for a second. That's how much I think I like Darkwin.
I think I like Darkwin. That's fun.
Really, I'm surprised. Yeah. I
think so. I mean, Peterson, it's up and down and they can say all they want about committing to the run, but you can't really commit to what amounts to a relatively ineffective run game in a game where you're losing. Like that just doesn't, it just doesn't play out that way in most cases. And I know they don't have a great passing game either right now and all parts of the ball are bad, but I just think Seattle can stack the box against them. And I think this will be more like that game a couple of weeks ago, 10 carries, 25 yards, whatever. And I just think Dark was in a great spot. So
yeah, no.
How about DeMarco Murray from your perspective?
He's a little banged up. So
I want some carries. Yeah.
Yeah. The Henry thing always, the Derrick Henry kind of always waiting in the wings. Murray's been playing hurt most of the year. So it's hard to evaluate how much that injury is really doing. I mean, Tennessee does run the ball so much that, and Murray has broken off a ton of long runs this season. I think those are probably in general going to be outlier kind of runs for him. So yeah, he's a guy that I have a little hard time getting a handle on. And I dislike guys like him when there is just another guy sort of sitting around that I feel like the coaching staff probably wants to play more, but they just don't have to because they have Murray. So that's kind of where I landed DeMarco.
Yep, I think that's fair. All right, I think we're going to get out of here. It's James and Doug again from DFSR.com. That's DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. We do sell access to a statistical modeling system. If you go to DFSR.com/NFL, you can access all of our projections. Great for informing your no halftime contests from week to week. Until then, we also run a basketball and a football podcast over on our site, DFSR.com, where you can go and get caught up on all the day-to-day news, especially on the days where they're the biggest slates. Until then, though, enjoy no halftime. Again, if you're a DFSR user, use promo code DFSR to get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit on no halftime. But until then, see you over on the app.
Go Orleans Darkwell.